Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 76. And in this podcast, I'm going to talk a little bit about shared libraries. Here recently, in Gentoo, I run a testing box, so I hit all the little bugs before anyone else. But there's a whole pile of people. I don't know how many are running these testing boxes. It's got to be in the thousands. And the Gentoo libping 1.2.x to 1.4.x upgrade didn't go very smoothly at the beginning. The reason seems to be that libping usage is very odd. It provides both a libping 1.4.asterisk and a libping.asterisk files. Some packages like to use the version libs, while some others don't, and it seems to lead to a giant mess in the asterisk.la files. If you are a programmer, you will want to reuse code written by others and design your program to be modular. You build up libraries containing reusable code. This is the shared libraries. There are two types of linking to libraries. Static linking takes the code from the library and combines it with the main program's code into an executable. Dynamic linking forms an executable that loads the library code when it is executed. Dynamic linking has the advantages. A, if you link against a software with a bug in the library, this bug can be fixed without the need to touch your executable. If more than one executable uses the same shared library, the overall memory consumption is lower, and the executable needs less disk space. Statically linked executables have this advantage. They do not depend on other libraries in the system that may not yet be installed. You can use them in another distribution that might have different libraries installed, and also you can be sure how they behave. Less testing effort. Dynamically linked libraries are also called shared libraries, or shared objects in Linux. Their extension typically is a .so, usually plus some version numbers. Now, a properly built shared object in ELF format, which is the format GNU Linux uses, will have a so name built into it. This is a name that is specified at the library's build time to GCC with the so name option. Every shared library has a special name called the so name. The so name has the prefix lib, the name of the library, the phrase .so followed by a period and a version number that is incremented whenever the interface changes. A fully qualified so name includes as a prefix the directory it's in. On a working system, a fully qualified so name is simply a symbolic link to the library's real name. Every shared library also has a real name, which is the file name containing the actual library code. The real name adds to the so name a period, a minor number, another period, and the release number. The last period and release number are optional. The minor number and release number support configuration control by letting you know exactly what versions of the library are installed. Note that these numbers might not be the same as the numbers used to describe the library in documentation, although that does make things easier. In addition, there's the name that the compiler uses when requesting a library, the linker name, which is simply the so name without any version numbers. The key to managing shared libraries is the separation of these names. Programs, when they internally list the shared libraries they need, should only list the so names they need. Conversely, when you create a shared library, you only create the library with a specific file name with more detailed version information. When you install a new version of a library, you install it in one of the few special directories and then run the program ldconfig. ldconfig examines the existing file and creates the so names as symbolic links to the real names, as well as setting up the file, the catch file, etc., ld.so.catch. LDConfig doesn't set up the linker names. Typically, this is done during library installation, and the linker name is simply created as a symbolic link to the latest soname or the latest real name. Thus, user libreadline.so.3 is a fully qualified soname, which LDConfig would set to be a symbolic link to some real name like user libreadline.so.3.0. There should also be a linker name, user libreadline.so, which could be a symbolic link referring to user libreadline.so.3. If you go to linuxcrazy.com and look up podcast number 76, I'll have some links to some very interesting articles by Diego Flame Eyes. And if you go to gentoo-pr.org, I did a little blog post on the steps that I took to get through this limping update on Gentoo. Not very hard, really. There's the developer, Solly Sossaman, provided this little script that will help you out. Basically, what I did was I went ahead and emerged sync, and then I went ahead and downloaded all the files that were going to be installed. So just in case something happened that I wasn't able to download all the source files, so that was I went ahead and downloaded all of those. And I went ahead and emerged, or in Gentoo it's install emerge one shot libping. And moving from libping 1.2 to libping 1.4 will break install lib2.la files. So that little script that Solly Sossaman came up with is user sbin libping-1.4.x-update.sh. And basically what it does is it replaces all of the it renames all of the libping 12 to libping 14. And the next thing I did was that I went ahead and ran a revdeb rebuild and LA file fixer double dash just fix it. Now, I alternated between all of this stuff until I had a clean system. You were liable to be able to run that script. And he suggests to run that script last after all else fails. So there's liable to be the program, the e-build is liable to be updated so that maybe there's not as much stuff will get broken. But he recommends that you just go ahead and just run revdeb rebuild and LA file fixer dash dash just fix it first. And hopefully everything will go ahead and install, and you won't even have to run his little script. I went ahead and, like I said, I went ahead and ran his script. Then I ran revdeb rebuild. Then I ran LA file fixer, and mine still wasn't done. So I went ahead and emerged Caro, Pango, GTK+, ATK, libglade, and qt.gui. And then again, after I merged those, I went ahead and ran revdeb rebuild one more time. And this time through, it rebuilt 51 packages. So I went let it go ahead and do its 51 packages. And after that was done, I went ahead and updated my whole system. So that was emerge-UND world. And after that was, I went ahead and ran revdeb rebuild once again. And I believe there was 70 packages at that particular time to rebuild. And once they got rebuilt, then I went ahead just for fun. I ran LA file fixer, just fix it one more time. And then I ran revdeb rebuild for the last time, and it came up clean. So if you go ahead to that Gentoo-pr.org, There's also a one-liner there that's a lot of people are saying that does it in one shot, and I put that at the bottom of the blog post. The main thing I've been doing here lately, the last week, I had in my room where I do all my computer stuff, I have a bunch of wires on the ground all over the place running everywhere. There was no real rhyme or reason for my little computer room. At the beginning, when I started out in 2000, it's the same room that I started out in 2000. I'd never used a computer before 2000. So that's where you see that nickname, CompRookie 2000. When I first started using a computer, I figured, well, shoot, what's a nickname? Because a lot of time I went to these sites to sign up for a form or something. They said, well, you need a nickname. And I said, well, CompRookie. And I put CompRookie and it was taken. So I figured, well, it's the year 2000, so we'll put CompRookie 2000. So that's where I'd actually got the nickname CompRookie 2000 from. And when I started out in 2000, I knew absolutely nothing about a computer. So what I did was I bought this El Cheapo Gateway, and it had Windows XP on it. And when I first started, all I had was dial-up and this Windows XP computer. And it was between the dial-up and it, the computer was just slow and Windows was terrible. I got really frustrated with it and I installed Linux on it. And I was pretty much hooked from the beginning. I probably only used Windows for maybe 6 months. But I've always been a real intuitive type person, to whereas even when I was using Windows, I was already going in there and going on forums and finding out how to edit the registry to try to speed things up or fix bugs. I was never afraid of doing anything to a computer. You know how you get people that are afraid to do stuff? I've never been really afraid to do anything with a computer. So I think that's why I liked Linux right from the beginning, because it enabled you to do more of your tinkering on your own. I didn't like the idea of just installing something and then just using it and not really understanding what was going on behind the scenes. And I tried to do that with Windows. It didn't work out very well. So that's when I moved on to Linux. But so you can imagine what's happened over the years in this room, was starting out with just one simple little computer with dial-up to now. I'll go through what I have now. I still have DSL. There's U-verse is here, AT&T U-verse, that you can install AT&T U-verse, but I just have the DSL. I have the fastest DSL that Bell South or AT&T now has. And it serves my purposes fine. I might go for the U-verse later on, but I have so much stuff already set up here that you'll find out in a minute the reason why I don't really want to change everything over. It comes into this DSL modem, and from the modem, I have it going straight to a Linksky wireless router, which is running DDWart. And this router works really well. It's got a firmware version 23 of DDWart on it. And from that modem to that router, then also hooked into the, from there at the router, and also hooked in at the router is the SPA 3000, which is a Linksky VoIP device. And what it does is it takes the incoming phone line when it comes in, my regular phone number, and it takes that and it diverts all calls to my Asterisk server. Now, my Asterisk server is also a little web server. If you go to dwabbott.com, and this dwabbott.com, I don't really do too much with it. It's mainly just a web server just for me to learn Apache and stuff like that. But the asterisk part of it, I use a lot. I also have a Canadian phone number as a DID, so you can actually call. You can call here in the United States, or you can call Canada. I just did that just to learn how to set something up like that. I could, at any given time, I could add a number in Europe, or add a number in Japan, or add a number in South America, so that a person could actually make a local call to somewhere. And let's say if you lived in Brazil and you wanted to call Brazil, you'd have a local, you could make local calls that way. So it was pretty neat. So I did that to learn asterisk. I just was intrigued by it, and I set up my own asterisk server just to learn it. So you have that box is it has the asterisk server in it and the Apache web server in it, and it also is a FTP server. Now, it's mainly just on my home network here that I, in case I want to transfer files really quickly, I can transfer the files right here on my little home network really fast. So that's one box. Now, from that, the next box in line is actually another test box, and it's a X86 test box. It's actually a little Core 2 Duo, but I've just got the box set up for just for testing X86. So it's set up to test X86. And the next thing closest over there is my printer, and I have an HP DeskJet 6940. It's a great printer. If you're looking for a printer that's just a good, solid printer, it don't have any scanner, it doesn't have any bells and whistles to it, but it's a good, solid network printer, and it works great with Linux. From there, over there, still going into that router, is two switches. I got two 8-port switches. I've got one switch. It's got three things hooked up to it, and the other switch has four or five different connections to it. The next box in line is my quad box, which is a testing box, and it's the one that I ran into the libping update on, and it's running AMD 64. Testing box, and then it has 8 gig of RAM on it, and it's a compiling machine. Now, I don't have a very expensive quad processor, Intel processor. It has about the cheapest one you can get, but it's available to be updated. It has a really good. I did put a really good Intel motherboard on it, so if later on if I wanted to update it, I can. But for me, it's fast enough. And my old work box here is actually a tie-in server motherboard, and it has 4 gigabyte of RAM on it, and it's got an Opperton. Yeah, here it is. It's a 1220 SE, and it's a 2.8 gigahertz dual core processor, and it's pretty solid. This box I have two 250 gigabyte hard drives in it. At one point in time, I had the one hard drive was actually a mirror of the other one, and it would every night it would rsync and update it. But I did one of those blunders one day. This is the main hard drive in this box is SDA. The next hard drive is SDB. And if I plug in a USB stick, it turns up as SBC. One time when I was using DD to I would take these live CDs or live DVDs and burn them onto a USB stick, I made a mistake, and I wiped that second drive out. So, well, that was a fiasco. And I made another mistake with DD here. One time I wiped out my, by doing tab completion in Gen 2. Most people, when they set up their partitions, they set up a boot and they set up, so that would be, here would be SDA1. And then my root partition, which has everything, would be SDA2. And then swap would be SDA3. So my boot partition was SDA1. Somewhere along the line, I wiped that. Luckily, I didn't try to reboot. Well, I didn't have any partition there. I mean, I had the partition was there, just wiped it, wiped all the data off of it. So luckily, it wasn't too bad of a fix. I just, because on the boot partition, all I had really was my kernels and grub. So I reinstalled grub and reinstalled, you know, the kernel. And, you know, no harm done, really. But I don't know how I made that blunder. It was just one of them tab completions. I was doing something, and I hit the tab bar, and before I knew what I was doing, I hit the enter. And, oh, boy. So that was one of those things you don't really want to do, but it happens. Home network. With all these wires all over the place, so I figured I wanted to try to organize these wires and stuff. So what I did was I disconnected everything and basically took all the wires loose. And now this took a, you know, first naturally I hooked up, you know, the main stuff, but it took me, you know, a few hours to do this. And I disconnected all the wires and tried to hook them back up in some kind of order and some kind of, you know, organization so that they're not just laying all over the place. As you could tell, the last things that I had hooked up or bought, because that those wires were the ones that were on the top. So, well, that's about it for this podcast. And, hey, go ahead and stop by LinuxCrazy.com and check out those links. Like I said, I've got some, Diego's got a really good blog, and he explains the shared libs a lot better than I do. And I have a couple other links there for you to check out. And if you ever want to catch me, I'm usually always hanging around when I'm not at work. I'm usually hanging around at on Freenode. It's the IRC. And the channel is a pound, Linux Crazy. Or you can send me an email. My email address is david@linuxcrazy.com. And if you have anything that you would like for me to talk about, just let me know. And if you have any tips or anything, anybody, if you have anything that you'd want to put on the show, just let me know. I'm looking for anything and everything. So thanks a lot, and I'll talk to y'all later. Bye.